the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I get tired and upset, and I'm trying to care a little less. When I Google, I only get depressed. I was taught to dodge those issues. I was told, don't worry, there's no doubt. There's always something to cry about. Stuck in an angry crowd. They don't think what they say.
What's the point of this radio?
Pack up your troubles in your own kit bag and every little thing you see.
I don't care what the people may say. What the people may say about me.
We're back at the races. Coming up on 15 into hour 2. Jay Privman, Mike Beer's colleague from the Daily Racing Forum, just finishing up a full and complete report from the courtroom to the jockey's room. Mike Beer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Excellent. Excellent. You got any legal proceedings, any legal wranglings to report?
It's only a matter of time. Nothing at this point, but it's only a matter of time.
No DWIs with golf carts yet at the meet. We're always on the lookout for those. Well, we did have. Did you follow this crazy thing with the kid on the bicycle?
No.
Oh my God, Allison McGee was telling me I'd seen the headline on, I guess it was yesterday, it was Thursday, so I guess it was Thursday, Wednesday night, seemingly a Backstretch employee on a bicycle was zooming along the sidewalk near the track and reached out and did some inappropriate touching, apparently.
Oh, wow.
And startled somebody on the sidewalk. And that, you know, some Keystone Cop activity followed, and
onto
the backstretch. And so description of the bicycle, description of the perpetrator, and they were searching around the backstretch, and they couldn't find the bike. They couldn't find. So not satisfied with creating this craziness on Wednesday night. Apparently Thursday he did it again in the morning, wearing a completely different set of clothes. And so I shouldn't make light of it, I guess. I don't know. Is it worth making? I don't know if it's a make light situation, but it certainly was a slightly amusing. I can't help myself. I'm sorry.
I agree with you. I mean, you have to be careful, I guess, what you make light of in this day and age. But yeah, I hear what you're saying.
So there's your police activity report. The police blotter, as they use, right?
Yeah,
didn't they use
exactly.
The Daily Racing Forum was famous for that. There was that, right?
That's exactly right.
The police blotter. I remember when I worked at the Dispatch in Oneida, there was that scofflaw column, you know, with the things that were, you know, that weren't headliners, but they were legal, and there would be some wacky hijinks in there.
Oh yeah, I used to scope that one out in the Saratogian all the time too when I was living up here. There was always that little section in the Saratogian, and that's the first thing I went to.
That's great. That's great. Oh, and then, of course, the news briefs, the DRF. Well, Mike, here we are, and checking in on week two. There's been a little less racing than we expected to this point.
Yeah. We knew we were going to get fewer days every week, but we didn't know we were going to get this many.
Exactly. It's too funny.
That's unbelievable.
What do you think? What has struck you since we spoke last week?
You know, I don't know that there's anything that stands out. I mean, I personally, you know, it's unfortunate that the weather hasn't really cooperated so far this meet. But I mean, I think overall the cards have been very strong. I mean, every day when I pull up these cards for these races at Saratoga, they're getting big fields. They're getting a lot of horses to enter these races, and I think the races are actually very competitive. So, you know, it'd be nice to, you know, get into regular racing and get some, you know, fast and firm days in there. But overall, I don't think you can really complain so far with the product. I mean, the product, I think, has been very good.
Yeah, I'm certainly not going to disagree. I mean, I know that, in fact, I had a conversation with Mike Lakow yesterday, and Mike is a little frustrated with the stakes commitments and, you know, the fact that in a lot of cases they're being limited to 7, 6, even 5 runners. And of course there was that awful situation that conspired really to end up having just the 3 Chad Brown runners in the Lake George last week. Some things went awry. I mean, Wesley Ward was going to run one, but then he had to even scratch the other. And Wayne Catalano, I mean, if Wayne had known that Wesley was coming out, Wayne probably would have run. So, you know, some of this stuff is I don't think avoidable. I mean, you know, if you're starting with a reduced pool to begin with, and then so many opportunities nationwide, certainly up and down the Eastern Seaboard. And I mean, let's be honest, if you've got turf horses and you're looking for black type in stakes, as much as you'd like to run at Saratoga, you look at nominations, you know that Chad Brown's going to run a minimum of one, a likelihood of two, and potentially 3 or 4. I mean, we're going to talk about the Bowling Green in a minute. The Bowling Green didn't stop anybody. I mean, the floodgates opened. We have a wonderful running. So, but it's regrettable, but it's understandable.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that's a tough situation in that division in particular. You know, I just don't know what you can do. And yeah, you can, I suppose, try and blame the other trainers. I personally totally understand where Catalano's coming from, even if he knew Ward was scratching both of his, to not want to run there. I mean, you know, frankly, that's a pretty nice filly he has, but she had no chance in that race against those horses. So, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, that's just one of those situations where Chad's got a stranglehold on that division, and he doesn't mind running three of them in the same race. So there's nothing you can do about that. But again, I feel like overall, and we're going to get some, you know, I know the Jim Dandy's not a huge field, but I think they got the right horses in there. And we're going to get some really good stakes races this weekend. I don't know how far you've gotten into the weekend, Steve, but the Amsterdam on Sunday, I mean, if that's a prelude to the Jerkins, I mean, it's unbelievable what showed up for that race on Sunday. And, of course, as you mentioned, the Bowling Green, you know, perhaps the best betting race of the weekend anyway.
Agreed. Before we start looking at anything that you like today and then the weekend, any notes, any horses, any trip notes or anything from the weekend or the week preceding year that since last week that
I feel like there have been some interesting ones. I'm trying to think of who I sent. I know there was the, I think this is sort of a universal one. Shug debuted that 2-year-old filly last weekend. Mrs. Danvers, I think her name was. She was, mm-hmm. I think she's definitely a horse to watch. I don't think that got by too many people. But even, you know, she has the big pedigree, but then, you know, even going over to the paddock before the race, you know, she's one of those, she was a little green over there, I thought, but she looked the part. And, you know, just, I think the greenness cost her. She didn't break well and then had to make that wide move. I mean, that horse, I thought, ran very well. You know, at the top of my head, I'm not getting to the horses that I sent in. But there are, up here especially, you know, with all the new faces showing up for these races and some of the bigger fields, you're going to find horses if you're paying attention. You got to watch the races closely, though, and put the time in. But you're going to find plenty of horses to bet back. And that's one of the good things that I think about Saratoga too. The guys will run back up here. So, you know, it's not like you're only getting to see these horses once or twice. I mean, you're going to see some of these horses three times or more up here. So, it's definitely, it always pays off to pay attention to that stuff.
One of the areas that I've started to ask people and I've been bringing up, the maiden races are a little more foggy than usual. Some of the things that we rely on, and I just get the sense that I'm getting kind of lucky when I hit. I ended up putting Basin on top, for instance, the other day, the Asmussen, mm-hmm. and barely held off three yep. technique of Coach Parcells and Engelhardt. I don't feel like I'm making 2-year-old maiden race selections with much confidence.
I agree with that. I guess, you know, I would, you know, suspect that part of that is, you know, you just don't have the dominant guys anymore. You know, Pletcher used to be able to rely on in these races, and you can't really rely on him anymore. He doesn't seem to have, you know, he's not loaded with that army of 2-year-olds like he used to be. And so you're winding up with a lot of evenly matched horses, I think, in these races and trying to find the new trainers, the guys who do well with them. You mentioned Engelhardt's horse. That horse, you know, he's great with his 2-year-olds now. He's a guy you really have to pay attention to when he enters his 2-year-old, especially his first-time starters. You know, I that race that you were mentioning, too, last weekend was one of the kind of 2-year races that I personally like because a lot of those horses had run already. So those are the ones that I'm way more interested in betting. The ones with all the first-time starters, to me, I've always treaded lightly in them anyway because, you know, you always have to worry about where the money's going to show up. And then even if it does, you know, I understand that the money is usually right and that there's a lot of smart money out there in those races, but I'm not looking to take short prices on 2-year-old first-time starters. So when the money shows, I would just assume pass as I would, you know, go with the money and play those horses. So I'm not trying to get involved in those. And it's gotten a lot harder, as you mentioned, just because, you know, this used to be Pletcher's game, and it's not anymore. So the races are way more wide open.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. The Asmussen team, and then look for the outsiders. I'm going to also talk about, before we handicap, I've got to bring up something that Nick Tamaro pointed out days into the meet, and I think you've echoed as well. The Kentucky claiming horses are eating everybody's lunch here. It is not close. They're coming in here, and I don't know. I am going to assume that it's a byproduct of the improved purse structure this past spring in Kentucky. And as a result, the horses that were dropped down and whatever level they dropped from and into, they have come to town and they're pushing us around.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be that, the meat was just so much stronger down there. Now they're showing up live. And it's very interesting that you brought that up, because you're right that it was, you know, it got noticed, I think, pretty early on. I noticed it mostly because every year prior to the meet for DRF, I have to, you know, write that, you know, the meet preview piece for the player's guide, and then, you know, pick out some trainers just for maybe people to keep an eye on certain things that they're good at. And for the last couple of years since I've been doing it, it was always something that I would hit upon, is that, you know, you're going to have a lot of guys shipping up from Kentucky, some very good trainers, who, generally speaking, don't win a lot of races when it comes to Saratoga. I mean, you can go through their records in the database, however you look them up, Formulator, anywhere. And over the prior, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, these guys were not winning a lot of races up here. And I think part of that was, you know, the jockeys got tied up into that, because you would, you know, see guys like Leperoux and Corey Lannery, who was up here for one meet a few years ago, just getting bashed by people. But, you know, they're coming up here riding for Kentucky trainers who don't win races up here. There's nothing really that they can do about it. And that thing has totally done a 180 this year. They are winning everything. And I think you're right. It has to be that they've, you know, they've redone their purse structure down there. Their races are way more competitive. I didn't, you know, personally, I don't follow Kentucky racing that closely at Churchill, but everybody was saying, you know, all the way through the summer, how much improved that meet was this year. And you know what? They were right. Their horses are coming up here, and they're running lights out in every race.
Yeah, and the opportunity is going to continue to you know, avail itself. Let's get a couple of opinions about today, Mike, because you've got a $44,000 pick six carryover, and the sequence starts obviously in the fifth through the 10th, but the pick five sequence as well, races 6 through 10, and even the pick four is going to be just terrific. And the scratch from the Nightcap, the horse that I think a lot of people were going to lean on, Bruce Levine, with that Later Cat, it's Later to Later Cat, scratches the even money MTO. And that throws that one into a cocked hat. Golaconda, you know, a career maiden. Ugh, do you want that? I don't know what you do now. Tailspin, actually. Michelle Nevin looks as good as anybody. You got a couple of thoughts about this sequence or anything else on this card?
Yeah, I mean, I do have to, you know, now that they're off the turf in some of these races, I have to go back through it. But, you know, it's funny that you brought up the 10th, too, because you're right. The scratch is just... And it really hurts people who want to play the Maltese. You know, if that race was on the turf, you know, I was all about using Golconda in there. I know that he never wins, but he actually ran pretty well last time, I thought. I think, you know, I haven't finished that going through it yet for off the turf, but you're right. I think about Tailspin, you know, sort of making a lot of sense now and there. I mean, you know, you still have the Curlin, which I think is a terrific race. I mean, they got a really good field for this race, you know, and I don't think there's any, you know, one horse that you can, you know, sort of narrow it down to in here. I think it's way more wide open than that. So for playing Maltese, this is something that we sort of talked about last week, Steve, when I was on. You know, I'm trying to play a little bit less of these, you know, the pick fours and pick fives that I, you know, usually rely on, just because I find, especially at Saratoga, they're just hard sequences to get through. And, you know, you could be wrong so many times in a row, even if you get the one horse you've been waiting for through it. You know, it's just so hard to complete these sequences up here. I picked Looking at Bikinis in the Curlin. I really liked his return. I think that was a very strong race that he came back in, and I thought he ran well in there. But, you know, he's got to stretch out, and, you know, he's facing some really good horses in here. So I don't think I couldn't just rely on him, but I do think he's going to run well in that race. I don't know, you know, I want to like Intrepid Heart still. I was sort of on him early on, and I've just been disappointed in his last two races. The distance is good for him. The post is good for him. I don't know. I'm starting to lose faith in that horse, and, you know, I still like Kieran's horse, Endorsed. He's bred to stretch out. He came back running off the layoff. I could see him doing well in that race, but, you know, when you start talking about that race that way, you know, I'm talking about three of the shorter prices in the race, so... You know, I don't know. It doesn't really do a lot for me. The sequence is just pretty hard now with some of these races coming off the turf. And, I didn't find a way to narrow that race down in any way that makes me want to, you know, really play it that way.
Interesting. I've got all kinds of sinkhole feelings about this race. I think looking at Bikinis, I went into it feeling like I would end up singling him, and then Jay Privman, when I brought up the Curlin and the Jim Dandy, the horse that Jay said he's most interested in, at least long term, might not be today, but he thought Highest Honors has got the higher ceiling than even than looking at Bikinis. That kind of, I thought to myself, am I going to have to use both Chads? I also think that there's something to like about Direct Order, the Jason Service, who continues to improve. And, you know, this is a pattern, you know, for those who just seem to attack and ridicule and gnash their teeth over Jason Service. Anybody who actually looks at things like Thoroughgraph, you see that there's horses of his that just get better, incrementally better, 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 better. I know people seem to think, oh, he's a big jump up. Actually, no. They make steady improvement as they race. And this horse just keeps improving start by start by start. And one more forward step at 10-1, and he's going to boost your exotics.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you're right, too, about the Service thing. I mean, it's sort of the low-hanging fruit thing, the way that people go after him sometimes. But I don't necessarily look at him that way either. My problem with Direct Order in this race is, and, you know, obviously we'll find out over time, but having watched him, you know, for basically his entire career, especially since he's gotten to New York, I'm not sure that I really think he wants to go this far. I mean, he still obviously deserves a chance to prove it. But I just from watching him run, I feel like he's better going shorter than he is going longer. But we'll find out more today.
I got to ask you about a race that it was just absolutely, to me, eye-crossing. That Starter Allowance 7th going 7/8, and yeesh, I was all over the board in here, and I ended up with Dizzy, who's 6-1, as much by virtue of the price as anything. I used It Was Considered because Stan Huff just seems to be, you know, electric right now. He's in position tomorrow on both coasts with Recruiting Ready in the Crosby and with the Global Campaign here. So Stanley, Born Again Hard, and Righteous Ruby, what's not to like along that, you know, moving to Gargan and coming out of, you know, those quality races at Churchill. There's Anne Dupre for the underrated Anthony Margata. On and on. Slimy off the win. I didn't think Kingdom's Queen was impossible. And Gary got this Alvernia. Siaka got Alvernia. And all he's done is, go 2-for-2 with her while moving up the ladder. I mean, she's got to really improve to impact this. But I'm not convinced that she can't show up somewhere. And I didn't even get to Fair Lassie. And Olive Cat is going to have the lead. This was nutty.
Yeah, this is a war, this race. You're right. A lot of different win candidates. I initially started it thinking I might go back to Kingdom's Queen. I do think she fits well in here, and I like her cutting back for this race. Ultimately, I didn't pick her on top. You know, and I think that's mostly because in that last one, it did feel like, you know, she got the right ride, that they're coming up the strong inside to win. You know, I still think she can win this race, especially if she gets a little pace. I'm going to use that horse. I think Slimy maybe even moves up, Steve. I was kind of against her because she won at such a big price here, what is it, 9 days ago, on a wet track, and we weren't supposed to have any rain this week, but that has all changed now. She's very good on a wet track, that horse, and, you know, just ran a really good race last week. So, you know, I can't leave that horse out. I wound up taking Stan Huff's horse on top, It Was Considered, mostly because, you know, I like this horse second off the layoff and cutting back in distance. They went the mile last time off the long lay. I think she couldn't get to Righteous Ruby, who was in front of her the entire way. You could see her flatten out at the end of that race. That could have been a function of the layoff, but I think it also could have been a function of her, you know, taking on the mile. Her first three races, the sprints, she ran well in those races. I think she's really going to appreciate this cutback. So I took her over Righteous Ruby, who, you know, I have no problem with Righteous Ruby. She's run two good races in a row. The 7 furlongs was perfect for her, and Gargan claimed her and protects her now, so he can't lose her. That horse makes a lot of sense in here, as does your horse, Dizzy. I can see that horse running a really good race here, Dizzy. I didn't pick her, but that's a horse that I think you want to use.
Mike Beer with us, everybody, and a really good card, and a card not badly impacted by the three races that were taken off the turf. So dig your heels in and take some swings today. This could be one of those days where, you know, you run second six times and yep. You want to gouge your eyes out. Let's turn our attention to Saturday, and I know that the Jim Dandy's supposed to be the race we're excited about because it's going to bring out Travers starters. I'm sorry, this Bowling Green, and I'm also annoyed. I presented the trophy for the Bowling Green last year, and I went to Carmen. I said, "Do you need me on Saturday for the Bowling Green?"
She said, "You didn't get asked back."
No, wow. No. I don't know. I thought I didn't drop the
right.
chandelier. It's not like
I'll go to the tape later and see. I'll see if I can spot the mistake that you made. There had to be something.
I was demoted. I was demoted to a restricted event to the Aladar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I not non-winners of a sweepstakes this year. I thought I've had a pretty good year, but it's the Aladar for me.
We got some work to do, Beck.
Well, we got some work to do on this 13-horse field. You got to be kidding me. This thing is unbelievable. And I'm going to end up taking a horse that has been away and is making his seasonal debut, which
uh-oh.
Is probably silly. Yeah, I'm a sucker for Sadler's Joy, but why not? Why won't he be ready to fire here? And he's going to be down inside, and he's going to be a decent number, I think.
Yep. I have terrible news for you, Vic.
Oh, no. You picked
we're
him,
on,
too.
We're on the same horse.
Jeez,
I'm sorry.
Cow.
Sorry to do that. But I mean, for really for all the reasons you said, you know, it's interesting. What I like about him is I think you're right. I think he will be a fair price in this race. I'm not so sure that, assuming everybody runs their best race, I'm not so sure he isn't the best horse in the race, Steve.
Yeah.
So I like that at a price. And, you know, I think you could look at him and look at his last three starts last year and think, oh, you know what? You know, he's tailing off a little bit. He wasn't quite as good last year as he was the year before. He only went 1-for-8. I don't believe any of that. I think he was every bit as good last year as he was the year before. Things just didn't break his way. And, you know, especially when you're catching, you know, softer turf. I don't think he really likes that. I think he would like it a little firmer. And he kept catching that at the end of the year last year. I don't know. I think he was still good last year. And historically, he's been good off of layoffs. This is a longer one than he generally gets. They usually bring this horse back at Gulfstream over the winter, and they didn't do that this year. They gave him a little more time, and I actually like that. As a six-year-old, you know, he never really had that long layoff. They would give him, you know, 2 or 3 months maybe, and that was it, and then come right back at Gulfstream to get him started. I like them getting him started a little bit later this year. I think this is a great distance for him. You know, I think what you have to worry about with him, especially in a field like this where they got, you know, 13 in here, you know, what kind of trip can he get? Because he is going to be off the pace, and he's going to need a little bit of help. He's going to need him to go a little bit in front of him, and he's going to need to get a clean run from where he's coming from, and that can be a problem in a big field. But if he gets that, I mean, I don't see why he just maybe isn't the best horse in the race, and he is going to be a square number in this race. So I took him, and I'm happy to bet him if he goes off at, you know, somewhere around his morning line. And, you know, I'm not knocking Arclo, and I'm not knocking Channelmaker. I think they're two, you know, as of now, with the form that they're in, maybe they're the two horses to beat. The distance is good for both of them. They both have enough positional speed to get the right trip in this race. They make tons of sense. And they're the two right, you know, shorter prices in the field. But I'm going to try and beat them with Sadler's Joy.
I love it. That's tremendous. If you wanted to tab a price, and for those of you that will be playing Beat Bic, as soon as the graphic is ready, and by the way, regarding the Beat Bic contest, Michelle Ravencraft and Holly Short, they were at a conference all week, and so they'll get the updates and the emails out and all that. They were tied up really all through the middle part of the week. But for those that are wondering if they scored last week and so forth, there is an email coming and all that, and there will be place on the website with updates and all those kinds of things. But anyway, I'm picking Sadler's Joy in the Bowling Green. My alternate is Olympico, who I doubt goes at 10-1.
That I kind of agree with you that I doubt he goes at that price. We'll see. Interesting to see what he does. I'm using him too. I actually bet him last time in the Manhattan. I gave him a shot in there because I really did like his Fort Marcy. So I'm going to use him. I'll say just for me, for using another price horse, I'm using Red Knight. He gets this distance. He's kind of handy. He's a tough horse to ride, it looks like, when you watch his races. If you don't get him covered up, he'll pull you all the way up the backstretch right up to the lead. He won't sit. So I think in that regard, La Perouse might fit this horse pretty well. He's run nothing but good races for Mott. I could see this horse getting a big piece of this at a price.
Nice. Red Knight. Good idea. Let's talk about the Jim Dandy, and we were alluding to it earlier. Jay talked about the big two, Tacitus and War of Will. Then you've got the under-the-radar type like Laughing Fox, Mijos to some extent, both 15-1. Tax feels like he's just a scooch short of the elite. And then there's Global Campaign, who we don't know yet, what exactly he is.
Right, we don't. He certainly looks pretty good based on the races that he's run. I like Global Campaign as a horse. And, I almost picked him on top in this race. I ultimately didn't do it. I think the only thing that stopped me, Steve, is that he's just so far anyway. He's had one of those campaigns where they can't keep him racing. And it's just a little worrisome to me at a horse who probably isn't going to be that great a price. You know, we'll see how they wind up betting it, but he keeps missing races that they want to run him in, and I think that's a little bit of a problem. I liked his Peter Pan just fine. I thought he ran really well in that race, and I don't worry about distance with him. And obviously in this race, you know, with his tactical speed, he's probably going to get a good trip in here too. So I'm not like against him. I just didn't put him on top because I don't like the way he's been campaigning so far, just because they can't get him to the races they want to run him in. You know, the two Triple Crown horses, Tacitus and War of Will, you know, I don't know. I like both of them as horses. You know, maybe I'm not as big a War of Will guy as other people are, but he's a very good horse, and I'm not going to be surprised when he runs really well in here. Tacitus, I think, is the horse to beat in a lot of ways. His Belmont, he had a pretty big excuse in there. I still think he ran well. His Derby, I thought he had an excuse in there too, and I still thought he ran well. It's not like he doesn't have anything to prove still. I think he does. And so at a really short price, I don't know how hard I would want to go on him, but I do think that in most ways he's the horse to beat in here rather than War of Will is. And I'll just say, I know that the three inside horses look like they might just be in a little over their heads here. I'm not against giving Mijos a chance to be this good. We'll see what happens. He may not be, and he may not want to go this far, but he's bred to go this far. I think he really needed the Dwyer off of the long layoff where Jerkins had trouble keeping him healthy and couldn't get him to races. I think he really needed that race last time, and I personally was a huge fan of his at the beginning of his career. The first three races this horse ran, I thought he ran really well in all of them and looked like he had a chance to be one of the better three-year-olds. And so I'm going to give him a chance to be one of them. You know, Jerkins just doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who just takes shots in these races. I think he felt like he needed the Dwyer to get him here, and he's going to take his shot in here, and I'm going to give Mijos a chance at a big price in this race. He's probably not going to be good enough, so I don't expect anybody to come along with me, but I'm going to bet him in this race and just see how he stacks up against these horses, because I have enough questions about the three outside horses that I'm not terrified to take a shot against them.
I can understand, and to some degree, for those that are going to play multi-race wagers, you may need to have two A's, two B's, two C's, and so make your own priority list. Maybe Tacitus and War of Will are your A's. Sounds like for you, Mijos and don't know, maybe global are your B's and Tax and Laughing Fox the C's. I may elevate Laughing Fox. I've got one of those problems. I happened to be in the paddock yesterday afternoon with Scott Blasey, and you know Scott was schooling about 8 stake horses from the barn, and so I'll be probably betting on all of them because it gets burned into your nitrous looked fabulous, Laughing Fox looked fabulous, but you know their horses always look great.
They do. That's the one thing about the Aspies horse. If you spend any time at the paddock, when they come over,
you're in trouble.
Having
a big week. They're having a huge week. Yeah. They won the Fortieri, with Tone Broke. Right. They won the New York Derby Basket.
Right.
It puts the lotion in the basket. Right. Or it gets the hose again. I'm in a funny mood. I completely lost. Asmussen, an opportunity. And honestly, it would be, not that it wouldn't be great for whoever wins this, but always happy to see Alex and Joanne Leblanc win a big race. Wonderful, wonderful contributors to the game, and not just in the sales arena and on the racing side, but of course Alex with the regulator role in Arkansas as well. A really fun edition of the Jim Dandy. What about the Vanderbilt? What are we doing in the sprint? Which Mattoli was there, by the way, in the paddock too, and he doesn't need any gilding of lilies.
No, right? He definitely doesn't. I don't know. I don't know how much I would want to, put in against him in this race. He does have the rail with speed to his outside. I don't know how much it is really supposed to affect him. It could. I wouldn't take a big stand against him, mostly because, the one horse at this point, it seems like, who, has races that, are maybe as good as anything Mattoli's ever run is Imperial Hand. Those races that he ran were in 2017. I didn't think he was as good or as sharp last year, and certainly so far this year he hasn't been. So I don't really want Imperial Hint in this race. If Mattoli loses, Friends I Fire beats him. And I don't think it's impossible that happens. We'll see how it all plays out. If I took a shot against Mattoli, it would be with Friends I Fire. I actually think his Met Mile was a pretty good performance. It doesn't look great on paper, I don't think, but the way the track was playing in there, the trip that he got where he tried to make that 4-wide move, it actually looked like he was going to, be a real threat there for a minute. You didn't want to be outside on that track, and he was, and I think it affected him. And, of course, he won't run it every time. That's the real problem for him, but he's run a couple of huge races this horse, and I like him cutting back. Maybe Mattoli gets hooked up a little bit early in this race, and it gives Friends I Fire a little bit more of a chance to run him down. I don't think it's impossible, Steve. To me, it'd be, a lot of Mattoli, and I'd be using a little Friends I Fire as well.
Well, of course, at Belmont, he's King Kong, and elsewhere, McGill Gorilla.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I guess that's true. His two really big races are at Belmont, but he's won it at other tracks. He's a graded stakes winner at Saratoga. I get the horse for course thing, and maybe he just really likes the big turns at Belmont. But I think he can run his race, at other places too. So I try not to get too caught up in that kind of stuff. But I think if he runs his good race here, maybe he won't do it. But I think if he does, he's got a little bit of a chance in this race.
All right, Mike Beer, we got to wrap up, but give us one other play somewhere on the card that you're excited about tomorrow.
I'm going to try the Jerkins Maiden stretching out of the turf in race 7, Hardstang. This horse was very green first time out sprinting, but was running at the end, is bred to stretch out, and is facing a bunch of first-time starters.
Interesting, and you're getting 7-1.
Yeah, he should be a fair price. Right? His running line for his debut looks terrible, but he was just very green. I don't think he really wanted to sprint. This is a big distance family on the bottom. He's supposed to do a lot better stretching out, and he was running at the end of that race.
Well, you also get Luis Saez, who continues on horses on the front end to just make everybody else look like complete amateurs. Maybe I'm a little biased because I'm looking up here at pictures of Pretension and Williams Lucky Gray. Louis won three races for us exactly the same way.
Right.
With a horse on the front end.
Who would have thought being aggressive could be effective?
He takes over, he backs it up into everybody's face, and then he does something I love. He spurts away into the turn, and all of a sudden everybody's panic-stricken, and his horse is full of run, and everybody else suddenly starts to pump. He'll also do it at the top of the stretch, and I love the way he completely, puts everybody on the defensive.
Yeah, it's a great strategy with a speed horse to, instead of, get into the front and settling, it's a great strategy to get everybody chasing behind you. It's a huge advantage when you can get those horses chasing and not sitting there comfortably just tracking off you. I mean, he does it perfectly, almost every time.
Well, Mike, this was great and informative. We'll do some more Saratoga with Nick Tamaro in a little bit, but still got to get to Hammer and Ed DeRosa, and then later, Mike, I don't know how I'm going to do this. We have an hour and 9 minutes, and we're going to have to sprint to the wire. Mike Beer, good luck today, tomorrow, Sunday, the Amsterdam you mentioned, and looks like if we're lucky, the rain will avoid us. We couldn't have gotten more unlucky yesterday.
That's correct. Hopefully the weather cooperates. I hope everybody has a successful weekend. Steve, I'll talk to you soon.
Mike Beer, folks, another tremendous visit. And you know what? I think, Joe, we have to stay because we cannot be giving up 2.5, 3-minute breaks between now and the end. So let's get after Hammer in here because I know he's got quite a bit to do. All right. Yeah. Let's get, we got Rick, we got Ed, Nick, Nancy, and Barry. We kind of overloaded. Well, we had to spend that time with Jay because the Hollendorfer news, important, and wanted to get it right. And when it's important and you want to get it right, Jay Privman, your go-to, and he will be in the courtroom today. So let's stay the course. And Hammer kicking around, and I think he's with us now.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Greetings from sunny California.
I'll say sunny New York too, but I was thinking the same thing yesterday morning at this time, and next thing I knew, the portion of the track was washed away.
That is pretty wild, but you're used to it, and things happen, and that's kind of it gets boring out here. It's sunny every day sometimes, and I'm not saying that as it does get boring. I enjoy a little bit of weather every now and again, so maybe not in the middle of a race card, but
exactly
right. But it's funny. I wanted to what happened yesterday kind of wheeled into what I just wanted to talk about a little bit today. Was after last week at Saratoga canceling and Monmouth making adjustments, and then yesterday a cancellation and. You talked about Del Mar deciding what to do. I just kind of wanted to go over what goes into making decisions like that and, what's thought of, or at least what I think should be thought of when decisions like that are made, as far as cancellations and, decisions for the meet and things like that. There's a couple of key components that should be looked at or should be involved. I don't know if they are sometimes, but like yesterday, obviously, you don't have a whole lot of time. You just sometimes you're just a no-brainer situation. You can't get the track fixed. Stuff happens in the middle of the day, and you just got to pull the plug. But on all these decisions, there's a couple key things that should be in place, and obviously, well, maybe not so obviously, is the people making the decisions should be well versed in decision making throughout the day on a normal day. In other words, you know, people that have to make smaller decisions usually are the ones that can make the bigger ones, because, you know, to be a decision maker, you have to have, you know, confidence in what you're doing. You have to be able to just make the decision on good facts and move on. So luckily, and in a lot of places, like, you know, especially out there, you know, Martin's involved. And I know some of the other people involved there are used to making decisions. Sometimes when you get someone in upper management that wants all of a sudden become involved out of nowhere in making a key decision like that, and you know, you sit in the room and you're going, oh, we're in trouble here. Because lots of times these guys don't have the right information, or they're doing it for the wrong reasons, decision-wise. And there's a few things that usually come in. Now, safety is always paramount. You may not hear it in a discussion when people are talking about doing things, but those have been around the racetrack a long time. Safety is number one, whether it's said or it's not. You know, both for the animals and for you know, the riders and also for the fans, many times trying to get to and from a place. But so, you know, there's a time frame involved. In other words, are we forced to make a decision in the next half hour? We have 3 hours. In the case of last weekend on the East Coast, a lot of time was had. You know, Saratoga decided to make the call, I think, what was it, on Thursday, to not race on Saturday?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, you know, there's many times when you have time, you know, it makes more sense to take the time. In other words, give people as much advanced warning as you can and move on. And that's one of the key decisions one of the key proponents of this. You make the decision and you move on. You don't second guess. You make it as a team and you go back. There's nothing worse than somebody, you know, on your team saying, oh, well, we should have done something else, you know, after the fact. So, you know, very, you know, those things need to be looked at. And when you're talking about decisions like that, I'm going to talk about last week more than anything. When you have things, there's so many things to look at. You're looking at the race types. You're looking at the if it's on the turf. You're looking at when these races could possibly come back, and how far maybe you could stretch it. Can we run a couple because we need to get that race in because it won't come back? Is there a stake race involved? How much advance warning do you need to give the fans to keep them in mind? So there's a lot of things that go into it. And you're making a decision at that minute with the information you have at that time, and you make it and you go. But like I said, the key component is who is making the decision, and do you have a backup? In other words, you can't just go ahead and like Saratoga did. They just moved it. They just took the races and, you know, pushed them on, and that works out great. If you don't think about that, if you cancel a stake race and you don't have time to bring it back and you haven't thought about it, you have to think about the ripple effect. So some interesting decisions that were made last week. Monmouth Park. Now, let's remember, in years past, the Haskell would be run on Sunday, coming up Sunday, right?
Right, right.
So they decided to make a change and run it earlier because of TV. I mean, I personally would never make a change to be on TV if it doesn't fit the schedule. And if you're in a, so that, but that had nothing to do with the situation at the time. But then it comes in play. If there wasn't TV involved on Saturday, would they have done what Saratoga did and just moved the card to the next to Sunday? Who knows? Maybe. So there's a lot of factors involved in these decisions. And once again, you know, the people making them need to go into it. You heard the governor was involved. So I think most of the time the goodwill is tried to be made in these decisions. A lot of times, maybe everything isn't thought out as well. But you know, anybody can steer a ship when it's you know, it's glass out there. When you get a wave coming at you, that's when you can see who's worth their salt. So a lot of decisions are made, but most of them are made the right way. But I sit back because we've had to do a lot of things out here and over the years with moving races, changing races, distances, whatever, and you know, some people take that challenge on well, and some people don't. And you can usually see it when it's being made, if it's made slowly or there's no firm statement about it, and you kind of go, you know, it's forgotten about the next day anyway. But anyway, just some of the things I thought, interestingly, that were put into to making a change like that. And consequently, yesterday, as I'm writing some stuff up, boom, I hear the Saratoga canceled. And in that case, guess what? You don't have time to think, which sometimes is even better. So anyway, that was just a couple things I was looking at. And you mentioned your Beat Bic deal. I just, right before I got on, I said I got to get my pick in. And so they have it all up now.
Yeah, it just came up.
And I was wondering about the email and all that stuff, but I guess they have a list now of the Beat Bic. So now I just have a question. It's called Beat Bic, not Go Along With Bic, right?
You know, yeah, just like in Beat the Host, where same concept, you have to beat the host.